the way my life started shouldn't have led here. And what I've learned, and I'm just learning over and over, is God is who he says he is. He has adopted us as a child. And if you come from a crazy family, that's really great news that you can be in God's family, because your family maybe doesn't feel like everything you would have hoped and dreamed. But he really has adopted us as his heirs, and he has so much goodness in store for us.
What's up, guys? It's Josiah. This is the Young Adults Today podcast and YouTube channel. And let me just say, this week is incredible. We're really excited. We are gearing up for the Young Adult Weekend this Friday, May 17th through 19th. And hundreds of young adults from across the state of Minnesota and the Midwest are meeting Micah and I in Alexandria at Lake Geneva Christian Center. It's a camp for young adults. And if you're watching or listening, it's not too late to join us. There is still open spaces and spots for you and your young adults to join us, ages 18 to 30. It's $10 off with the promo code podcast, and you can click the link in the show notes, as well as visit youngadults.today/the-weekend. And today's episode is presented by our friends at Thrivin. And whether you're overwhelmed or maybe stressed out when it comes to budgeting and spending and tracking where money's going, there's a brand new free tool created by Thrivin called Money Canvas. With Money Canvas, you work one-on-one with a coach who just will help you track your spending, your saving, and your future goals to free up resources towards God's kingdom and everything that is in your heart's desires. And so check out, it's a free tool. You can go to thrivent.com/moneycanvas. Be sure to let them know that you heard about it right here on the Young Adults Today podcast. And now onto our latest conversation right here on Young Adults Today.
Well, what's up, everybody? Hope you're having a great day today. I hope you're feeling alive today, like we always say here at the Young Adults Today podcast, where we're reaching the 18 to 30 year old as leaders, as pastors, as working on college campuses, or maybe you are an extreme volunteer and you love just leaning into the 18 year old, the 30 year old's life, and just helping them uncover and discover all the things that God has while seeing them spiritually grow in that process. And like always, if you would like to rate, review, share this with a friend, every single Monday we kick off a new episode, and it's reaching over 67 countries from the top 2% globally because of you and you listening and just tuning in of what and how you can grow as a leader by just listening to some of our amazing guests. And speaking of amazing guests, today we have a new friend. Her name is Kristen Hallinan, and she is an author. She's a popular writer, a speaker, and you, Kristen, just came out with a newer book, if I'm not mistaken, called Legacy Changer. And that is essentially what we're going to be talking about today. How can we be legacy changers? So we're going to unpack that. But Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I am stoked to be here.
Well, we are so thrilled to have you, and for as a new person in your life and you and mine are just kind of getting to know each other. And for the audience who may not know who you are, can you just give us a little recap of your story, life, journey, and maybe how you got to where you are today?
Yeah. So my family and I, we live in Texas. We moved here from Colorado about 5 years ago, and we have 4 kids. So our house is almost never quiet. Right. They range a big, wide age gap. We have a 6-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 14-year-old, and 16-year-old. So we have that 10-year age span. And so we're doing like first grade Valentine boxes at the same time as we're doing like homecoming and football games, and we're doing all the things. But I was raised mostly in Southern California and in a really dysfunctional home. My childhood was chaotic. I didn't really ever know what to expect. We moved all the time. The relationships in my family were not steady and stable. My parents' marriage was not a healthy one. And there was a lot of just emotional disconnection between everyone in the house. I have one sister. She's 4 years younger than me. And so I grew up and developed all these skills that I thought just meant I was really tough. And it turned out it just meant I was really wounded and hadn't done any of the work to heal. And I was masking all these things. So I developed a super codependent personality and super hypervigilant, always looking over my shoulder, trying to assess the situation of the room I'm in. And I brought all of those behaviors into motherhood and to my young marriage. And it was not serving me well. It wasn't serving my marriage well. It was really hard on my husband, and it was not allowing me to be the mom that I had always really wanted to be. I thought, you know, I grew up in this difficult home. And so if I just tried hard enough, I would grow up and force my family into this like perfect family. And for anyone who's been in a relationship ever, that knows like, that's not exactly how things roll. So all that to say, I eventually made some really hard decisions and started putting some boundaries around myself and what I allowed and didn't allow in my life, and got into therapy. And I didn't want other women to have to work so hard to find the resources and the knowledge and figure out what the Bible has to say about all these really difficult relationships. I didn't want them working as hard and as long as I did. And I put together the best of everything I learned into a package, and that was born into my book, Legacy Ginger.
Oh, Kristen, I love that you just went there and you were just raw and real with our audience today of just saying like, hey, this is where I was, how I was raised. This is how it affected me. These are the wounds that I've had to address. And you took yourself on a journey to help prevent others from going through maybe the deep, deep trenches and maybe some prevention in the process. And many of our listeners, they're pastors, they're leaders, they're individuals working with young adults who are living in a world of chaos. We all come from some form of dysfunction, right? And it's whether or not we take it with us into the other relationships, or if it's whether we're willing to work through those hard things that we've maybe didn't ask for, or that we were submerged in, or just born and raised in. So we always love to ask every single one of our guests, why do you believe that reaching the next generation in young adult ministry is so vital in this day and age?
I think we are in a really special time in history, just socially, where we're starting to have a willingness to talk about these things and to say, I want to recognize two things can be true at the same time. I want to love my family and I want to honor where I came from, but also at the same time, my family did some things that didn't serve me well, and I want to learn how to do better for my life now and for either my family that I'm starting to raise or my future family. And so I think diving into a conversation, just normalizing the fact that, hey, we all come from a place that's a little messed up in one way or another. You know, we're somewhere on that spectrum. And it's okay to say that things could have been done differently. I think prior generations, just, you know, a suggestion that maybe things should have been done differently in the family, it just felt like a betrayal. But I really see a movement now towards people being willing to talk about it. We scientifically are really starting to understand what happened in the brain. And that is, you know, this is not, you know, quote unquote, all in my head. This is something that really happened and changed my brain and is affecting me still today. And so I think it's just kind of the perfect myriad of we're now willing to talk about these things and we're learning scientifically. And of course, the Bible has said the truth for thousands and thousands of years, but I love when brain science seems to like suddenly be proving the Bible right. And so yeah, I think this is just a really special time and an opportunity to start doing things differently.
I love that you go there, because I know that I'm not a scientist by any means, but I've read articles just about the neuroplasticity of our brain, whether it's negative thinking, whether it's working through traumas, whether it's self-talk and self-doubt and self-beatdowns that we have of our thoughts that maybe we have of ourselves or have been placed on us that we've adopted along the way. Can you just unpack, like, what have you found out when it comes to the brain and the body science of those emotional wounds that maybe are holding us or many of the audience or the young adults that we're serving captive? Like, how do they coincide?
So when something happens, you know, the T word trauma is tossed around a lot these days. Yes. So I think it's important that we're clear about, you know, what truly is trauma. And trauma occurs when two things happen at the same time. Number one, whatever pain we're experiencing, we feel like we have no choice but to sit and endure it. We don't feel like we have either the voice or the body control or whatever it is. We don't feel like we have an option to get out of it. And then also, whatever happens afterwards, we didn't receive proper care to regulate our emotions and understand whatever we just went through. So when those two things happen, the amygdala that sends that fight, flight, freeze, fawn sensation, and you know, it's shooting chemicals throughout our body and deciding how we're going to react to something, it takes an imprint of our body. Less so a memory of the actual events, you know, how we think of typical memories, but it's more a body memory. So I remember when I felt really scared, or when I felt really shamed, or when I felt betrayed, this is how my body reacted. And it protected me in a sense to survive that moment. And so now anytime in the future that that same feeling is triggered, it could be a tone of voice someone uses, or I'm in, you know, a childhood place I visited often, or a smell I remember. Anytime our memory is triggered, our body memory shows up in our nervous system, and it triggers that same response. Like, oh yeah, I remember when this happened, this is what the body needs to do to keep me safe. And so we might be like, okay, that happened when I was seven. I'm 30 now, and I'm standing here with my husband, and my two-year-old is with us, and I think I'm safe, but I feel incredibly unsafe. And why do I feel like a raging maniac all of a sudden? And it's because your body is remembering what happened to you all those years ago, and you haven't yet processed through it.
Wow. I love that you just kind of unpack that for the person who maybe doesn't have the scientific background or anything like that, because I'm even thinking of things that have happened in my life, good or bad. Like even when I walk back into like my high school, and I've graduated almost like 20 years ago. So when I walk back into that school, it takes me back to like the first week of like the lockers, the school shopping, going to Target, picking out like anything from like literally elementary to like high school sports, that feeling when spring is in the air of like, oh, it's track season. It's baseball season starting. Like I was in that relationship and I went to this dance and I remember wearing this Bath and Body lotion. Like it's really weird. Like it can trigger positive reinforcements of our memory, but then also those negative things for the audience and myself. It's just so fun. This is kind of an off script one, but what are some warning signs of those like emotional wounds that are triggering? Are the warning signs what you kind of just unpacked, or how do we discover like what is healthy memory and what is an unhealthy memory, and how do we overcome and identify some of those things in our personal lives?
Yeah. So I think this is what you're asking. How do you know, like, are these things showing up for you? Yeah. There's emotional signs and then there are physical signs. So if you're someone that you're like, I don't really know why, but I just feel like a tight chest and stressed out often. This is happening way more than it seems reasonable for what's happening in my life. Or I just have this pit in my stomach, or I am like an excessive people pleaser. I have to people please constantly to feel safe and feel like I'm going to be okay. Or I'm a worrier. I need everything super orderly in my environment. So things like that, that don't seem proportionate to what's happening in your everyday life. Those are pretty common signs that you have some trauma that has not been healed. And so if that is you, my recommendation would be to connect with a therapist that is specifically trauma trained. I like to compare the analogy of trauma to you're in a car accident and you break a leg and you go see a surgeon and he kind of explains to you, okay, so you have a broken leg and this is what's happened to you. And that's good and important. And that's kind of equivalent of talk therapy. We go and we talk to a therapist. This is what's happened. We kind of are starting to understand it. But unless a surgeon actually operates, unless he does something to repair that broken leg, and then unless we're with a trauma trained therapist who is using trauma techniques of healing like EMDR or brain spotting or neurofeedback, unless they're doing something to change the neural pathways in your brain, then you're not going to find that full healing that you're seeking. Talk therapy alone doesn't cut it for trauma. And so we really have to get into the root of what's going on. And, you know, a lot of talk therapy and story work can be a super important part of that process. I love story work, especially when it comes to unpacking shame. And when did I start believing these lies? Like, where in my life did I start believing that my voice didn't matter? Or when did I start believing that I wasn't lovable unless I performed in this way? Story work can be really powerful for that. But if we're talking about trauma that's bringing on, especially the physical symptoms, we're going to need specific trauma therapy.
Oh my gosh. I could just geek out over this conversation. I feel like for hours, because I was at a women's conference and I actually won an 8-hour coaching package. And there's like 2,000 women. I lean over to my friend and I go, I'm going to win today. I just feel it. I'm like, I'm not the one that's like, I'm going to win. I'm declaring like prophetically, but I was like, I feel like I'm going to win this package. And she's like, Micah, there's like 2,000 people here. I was like, I know, but I just feel it. And they ended up calling my name and I went to this coaching, and you just talking about the storyboarding, even in the coaching realm, was very helpful for me personally. So I met this lady named Penny, sat in her basement, and she gave me like 3 or 4 different sticky note colors. And she's like, this one represents your happy memories. So you have 0 to 10, 11 to 15, 16 to 20. So she broke up my ages in like these columns on this big board. And she's like, this pink is going to represent the traumas, the things that have happened in your life, a death, an unexpected event, something that was something troublesome or something big in your life. And the other one, another color represented like joy and happiness and like kind of like accolades and things like that, like the happy memories. And then she had 2 other colors that were just like dreams and passions and just kind of like mile markers of like just life in general. Like, oh, you went to state track, or, oh, you made it into this college and university. So she helped me just identify things. And I remember stepping back from that board and she gave me like an hour and a half. So she just turned worship music on and left me in there. And I was like, okay, here we go. And when I pulled out those pink sticky notes, which were kind of like the warning signs, you know, of just like, whoa, if I don't deal with this pink sticky note, that's kind of a warning right now in my life at age 25, probably, or 30, when I got the package or won it, I was like, that has the potential to turn into a red flag later in my marriage, in potential parenting. And some of the things that we experience in our lives are deep in our memory bank. Some things we choose to be a part of, sometimes that are done to us. Sometimes things are decided for us. And sometimes it just is based on the origin of where we grew up, how we grew up, parental dynamics, sibling rivalries, like all those things come into play. So when we have the family origin, and along the way, we can settle for the same cycles of history, or we have the potential to be a generational difference maker. Can you just unpack, how can we uncover the patterns and the breakthrough generational curses, like in Jesus' name? Like, how do we get to that point? Maybe the storyboarding, maybe the coaching, maybe the not only talking therapy, but once we reach that point of saying, whoa, I need to take some ownership over every dynamic of my life. I need to surrender it to the Lord. Can you just unpack what you found and what is the basic steps that we can just maybe even lean into today with the time that we have in this conversation?
Yeah. I have a chapter on story work in the book, and I walk through the process in a very similar manner to what you described. And what I do is have people circle relationships and circle feelings that showed up over and over and with different colors. And so we start to see those patterns emerge. Like, that's the time in my life where a lot of fear started happening. Or I can see that over and over, my dad's falling in to those really hard memories. And you can see it in a way that maybe your brain just couldn't recall it on its own before without seeing these patterns emerge. One of the really cool things that I found was, I wasn't a believer until my early 20s. And my dad was and still is an atheist. My mom grew up Catholic, but wasn't practicing. And so I didn't have that relationship, but I could see God's footprint start to emerge in my life, even long before I was a believer. I could see over and over again. My therapist likes to say, Kristen, people with stories that start your way don't usually end up your way. And I could just see that it was God over and over protecting me and going before me and saving me from all these things that could have been and probably should have been based on my choices, how I was reacting out of my pain. But he saved me from them. And I don't think I could have seen that, that sweetness is without doing it. So I think sometimes there's a fear around story work. Like I don't really want to bring back all of those really painful things that I went through. And sure, I have some of these things now that I deal with, but like, that seems horrible. I'm not going back and digging all that up, but I just want to encourage the person that might be feeling like that, that A, this is a path to healing. And so that is worth every ounce of hard. But B, that there's so much sweetness in it too. So for someone that's saying, yeah, I have these things that I know are painful, and I want to start making some changes today, even beyond doing the coaching or therapy or whatever it is. I think starting to learn to set some boundaries and thinking of boundaries less like a wall that you're putting in between you and somebody else, less like a restriction you're putting on someone else, and more like a safety net that you're putting around yourself. Because at the end of the day, we can't decide for other people to behave differently. We can't decide for them to show up differently, to make more effort in the relationship, to listen to our voice, respect our voice. So we can't control any of that, but we can control how we respond when they make unkind or unhealthy choices. We can control who we expose ourselves to. We can control how much we pour into a relationship or how much we allow that person to see of ourselves. Not every person should have equal access to us. I think as Christians, especially, we can get a little bit confused about what it looks like to chase after Jesus and put personal boundaries around yourself, because it seems like, he loved everybody and he dined with the least of these, and he didn't seemingly restrict a lot of people, but also he had 12 closest disciples that he gave much more access to himself than he gave everybody else. He did not give everybody equal access when he was in his human form on earth and having these relationships. And I think there is a lot of sense in modeling our life after that also.
That is so good. And here's where I think a lot of the listeners, so pastors, I feel like, are some of the loneliest people out there. Ministry leaders are some of the loneliest people out there. And it's not that we, or as at large, when I say we choose to be lonely or isolate, but there is this unfortunate stigma, I think, that we've kind of put up with throughout the years. Like, ministry is only lonely if you let it be. Life is only lonely if you let it be. So how do we lead like with bountiful love and not boundaries? Because I feel like I've come across many individuals, whether they're the young adults that I've served, like they want people to ask them the hard questions. They want them to have those probing conversations of like, oh, not how's the weather, how's your soul? So, and that's where I start many of my relationships or mentoring sessions with women. 'Cause I'm like, I'm not here just to, you know, play with your hair, tickle your back and make you feel good. Like, it's okay. You know, it's to be like, no, God has called you to be a strong warrior. We need to work through and uproot some of these fruits that we're seeing in our life, whether it's anger, whether it's frustration, whether it's guilt, whether it's shame, whether it's whatever trauma. Like, we have to relive those to see the healing and to experience the healing, to hopefully experience a more full, beautiful life that God has called us to. So for the listener, whether they're a leader or maybe a pastor, what advice do you have for the listener when it comes to setting up those healthy boundaries in the relationship, the way that Jesus did when they find themselves maybe without a friend?
Yeah.
How do we even start that dynamic? I don't know if you have any experience with that, but I just feel like we are called to do life together. And just because we're called to be a pastor or somebody's shepherd does not mean that we neglect our own personal friendships in the process. Mm-hmm. And granted, we can't share everything with everybody. You know, like, there's some things that just need to be confidential, but there's a fine line and almost like a dance that needs to be done. And how do we identify those boundaries and those friendships and the trust process as we feel like we're falling into somebody else's, you know, circle of friends or inviting somebody else in? Do you have any insight there?
Yeah. I like to think of it as kind of a dance. And so as we're starting to dance with someone, as we're starting this relationship with them, we kind of test the waters and we see, you know, if I move two steps this way, do you come with me and can match the intensity and it was safe and okay? And then if I move four steps this way, can you do the same thing? And because relationships are an ebb and flow, and even in a relationship that maybe once felt really safe, it might have a different season to it. So matching somebody's ability for relationship, my therapist talks about it at like it's a report card grade. You know, if somebody is capable of a C plus relationship, then I offer C plus access. And then they are doing some of their own work and they're getting healthier. And all of a sudden they're capable of a B relationship. Awesome. I can start opening up more and sharing with that person. But I'm using caution and I'm using wisdom. I don't approach everybody in every new relationship expecting that they are capable of an A plus relationship. And I just lay it all out on the table because that's just not wise. And it's asking to probably get hurt, but I also want to offer it and I'm willing to get a little hurt. So if someone looks like they might be capable of a healthy relationship, like, okay, I'm going to offer you B, I'm going to offer you A minus, and I'm going to see if you can respect me and be tender with my heart and hold the things that I tell you in confidence. And so, yeah, just that constant dance of figuring out how much relationship are you capable of? How much relationship are you desiring? Do you feel like you have time for? And then matching it, because I think the tendency of a lot of people that have been through trauma and they are so deeply craving somebody in their life to be a safe person, to be able to hold all their big, hard feelings. The tendency can either be the extreme of offering way too much or the extreme of I'm not going to trust anyone and I am just keeping it all to myself. And health isn't found in either of those extremes.
Yeah. Kristen, what have you found like in your own personal breakthrough moments of identifying some of the wounds, maybe some of the friendships to let in or even let go in that process? Because I think I've worked with a lot of young adult women who try to hold on to every single relationship, not like of the opposite sex relationship, but just any and all relationships, thinking that they can't let some dissolve. They can't walk away. They can't, you know, so in your own journey, what advice do you have for somebody who's desiring those breakthrough moments? And maybe you can share some of yours as you were uncovering what health looked like for you and for your soul and tending to those wounds.
Yeah. I have one that was really big in my life. And, you know, breakthrough is a good way to describe it, but also didn't feel like a breakthrough at the time. It felt really hard at the time. I was in a group of girls that we would meet every 6 weeks for dinner, and we had been meeting for 4 or 5 years. And we would go pretty deep when we were together, but there was also, air towards negativity. Like it was kind of the group's MO to complain about things, or, there wasn't a lot of holding joy at the same time. So when I started in therapy and I started to heal, and I would say, you know, I'm going through all these really hard things. And then, but at the same time, I'm so grateful for this. And I am really excited about this coming up. And I would be on the more positive. They didn't really love that side of Kristen, because that didn't confirm the way they wanted to have conversation and how they wanted to show up. And so there started to be a lot of pushback, and it got mean. And it took me by surprise, because I felt like I'm getting healthier, I'm doing good, but why are all these people that I perceive as some of the closest people to me reacting so negatively to it? And the truth is, back to that dance of a relationship, people, even if it's a really unhealthy relationship, they are used to the dance that you do. And all of a sudden you start changing the steps on them, and they're like, no, I like that old dance we were doing. Go back to that. Like, I knew what to expect out of you, and that was comfortable to me. And so sometimes when you're healing, or I would say all the time, when you're healing, you should expect relationships to change. And the way somebody responds to your healing is 100% out of your control. And I think it's just a healthy time to reevaluate the relationship and say, is this a relationship that's going to keep contributing to me positively healing? Or do I maybe need to pull back a lot? You know, maybe not necessarily cut them out of my life, but pull back and just be a little bit wiser with what I share.
Oh man, I keep having more and more questions as we talk. I love that answer and that response, because it's a healthy response, and it's a healthy way to identify some of the people in our life that maybe have not been bringing positivity or joy to the table in essence, when it comes to a friendship and offering that. How do we avoid going back to the land of familiar? Because once we start that journey, it's very easy to go back to the land of familiar, to hold on to whatever it is, fill in the blank. Yeah. Cause like the Israelites, they went through their cycles. They would worship the Lord, and then they'd build their idols. It'd fall away. Lord, we need you. Like, how do we not become like that, or have that mindset? And how do we continue to experience those breakthroughs without going back to the land of familiar?
Yeah. That's a really great question, because it's so tempting to do, especially when you get around people that were part of your old life, or you're visiting back with high school friends, or you're going to Thanksgiving and you're with all your aunts that love to gossip about everybody, and you're in those old familiar things. For me, it was finally having enough fear of who I was becoming and the path that I was heading down. It was about 5 years ago now, and my mom had moved in with us, and because she didn't have anywhere else to stay, and the unhealthy relationship that had always existed between the two of us was just magnified with her living in our house. And it was, after a couple of months, really weighing on my marriage and really weighing on my kids and just my ability to mother. And, she was having a lot of unhealthy behaviors. I was waking up every morning and finding her laying on the ground of the bedroom floor, and pills are scattered everywhere. And so I'm cleaning everything up and terrified, what if it's my 18-month-old that walks in and finds all of this and it's not me? And beyond the obvious safety issue there, I could just see my kids crumbling in the way that reminded me so much of how I wish somebody would protect me from my mom's behavior and my grandma's behavior growing up. And my dad's behavior for sure, and nobody did. And here I was inviting the same thing into my house, and I just refused to be another link in that chain. And so as hard as it was for me to say, you have to leave our home, and as hard as it was for me to start putting boundaries around my own behavior, I was scared enough about what was going to happen if I didn't, to myself and to my kids and to my husband, that it was worth it to snap out of what was easy and familiar and to just really make the hard choices.
Oh man, hard choices for hard seasons will reap a harvest of good things for the kingdom of God. And do you have any other thoughts for the listener today that you want to encourage them with? Anything encouragement wise?
Yeah. I would just say that you, in Christ's strength, are capable of so much more than you can imagine today. It's really hard to imagine a completely different life than we're living, I think, or imagine, you know, it feels like I'm in the pit and things are so messed up and things feel so far. I've made so many bad choices. How am I ever going to get to that healthy, happy life that I desperately wish I was leaving? But Jesus already knows how he's going to get there. And he's gone before you and he promises to hold your hand through it. And I would just say that to not give up, because every ounce of victory, every ounce of healing is so worth it, and is not only to make a difference in this life, but for generations to come. We're not healed until the other side of heaven. We are always in the practice of healing, always in the practice of sanctification, but every ounce of victory is an ounce of territory that you've taken that your children are not going to have to fight for, because you've done that fighting for them.
Amen. Come on. And I'm just reminded, I just want to read this really quick, and it's Psalms 1, 1 through 4. And I just feel like it kind of starts tying a bow on some of the things that we've talked about when setting up boundaries and just experiencing stuff. So verse 1 in Psalms 1 says, blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked, or stand in the way that sinners take, or sit in the company of mockers, but whose delight is in the law of the Lord, and who meditate on his law day and night. The person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yield its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. And I just feel like this keeps coming to mind just as our conversations just unfolding today, of there are so many things that God has in store for us. And this side of eternity, we're not going to experience the full healing. We're not going to experience perfection or being in the presence of complete perfection until we see Jesus face to face and we have that moment. But I just feel like, listeners, I just want to encourage you today, like Kristen said, keep going, keep fighting for the healthiest version of yourself, because there is, and there will be joy on the other side or at the top of that mountain. And I just think that if we don't deal with the sin of the legacy or the trees that have gone before us, the people in our lives, our children are going to reap the destructive benefits of our own unwillingness. And, yeah, I just want to encourage you, identify what is in your life that you have not wrestled with the Lord with, and what do you need to take before him? What do you need to step into, and what do you need to let go and just let God take control? Because, oh man, I've just been on the journey the last like 2 years of my life, becoming the healthiest version of myself physically after 2 C-sections and babies and hormones and thyroid and everything. And realizing like, it's not only the physical, there's emotional, there's spiritual, there's psychological, there's relational. Like, we are layered people. We're messy creations, but we're beautiful mess in God's eyes. And as we peel back one layer of our heart, like an onion, we just become more exposed to the things that God has. But then we also, I think for me, I begin to realize that I'm so far from perfect, you know, like humility is what I pray for, but pride is what I wrestle with. You know what I mean? It's like this tension. Yes. And goes back to like, okay, Lord, sanctify me, like truly, like hollow me out so there's nothing left of me. Because apart from all of us, we cannot do anything. So we just want to lean into the last 5 minutes, Kristen. If you're up for a good challenge, I don't know if you like sports, but this is like the home run derby, like the 5 and 5. So we're going to be swinging for the fences here. So are you up for the challenge?
I'm up.
All right, let's do it. Okay, question one is, what legacy do you want to leave behind?
Right now in this season, it's a legacy of knowing their voice matters. I didn't feel like my voice mattered. It's taken me years and years to fight for, and I think I'm still in that process of figuring out that my voice matters and it's worth using. But my kids, I want them to know that they're worth listening to, their ideas are worth listening to, and that we're going to respond when they have something to say.
Oh, that's so good. And it reminds me, I don't mean to take your minutes, but it just reminds me of something that we were sitting in a room with a bunch of people, and 42% of the world has not heard the gospel. And they finally got to this church that was underground, and they got downstairs and they got in this space that was like soundproof. And the guys looked around and they said, "What took you so long?" So when people are praying for 30 years for people to hear the gospel, how much more do they need to hear your voice?
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm emotional today, but Kristen, I want to say thank you for going there. Yeah. And thank you for plowing hard ground and hard hearts that need to turn to the Lord. Because I believe that we are truly in a season of repentance as individuals, as believers, hopefully as a nation. Yeah. I don't know what that looks like. But I just want to say thank you, because your voice does matter. And listener, I just want to encourage you, like, you don't know what's on the other side of your yes. And you don't know what God has for the people that you're trying to reach. So I never cry on this podcast. So don't give up. Keep plowing the hard ground. Please keep praying for the hard hearts that are far from the Lord. And on a higher note, we'll ask a fun question next. Kristen, what is a fun hobby you enjoy outside of maybe reading and writing and speaking?
Oh, there's a couple quirky things I love. I love baking because I'm gluten-free. And so I love to make the things that I wish I could be eating, like gluten-free churros homemade are my very favorite. Yes. And I also love painting. I'm not great at it, but I love it. It sings to my soul.
Oh, I love it. I love a fresh, cheap renovation somewhere on the house.
Yes.
All right. Here's a fun question that maybe keeps me on my toes. If you could ask me any question today, what would you want to know? Fun or serious? You can go any direction.
Oh, gosh. I would love to know that when you are, you know, it's for me, it's 4 o'clock PM or but that time of day when you're like, you're just kind of exhausted, you just kind of had it and you need a little pick me up. What is your go-to?
Ooh, my go-to. My lull of the day has always been about 2 to 4. I remember being in elementary school being like, are we done yet? And then it's like snack time when you get home. So I'm still that person. 2 to 4 is my lull of the day. My go-to is actually like an iced coffee, and I've been Organigold, like a mushroom root coffee. So I've just been enjoying that with a little bit of ice in there, as well as some hazelnut creamer. So if it has to be
a drink, amazing.
It's a pick me up like that. If it has to be a fun activity, it's hard to do an exercise, but if I find myself really down, that's what I want to do. So I'm in the process of disciplining myself to get back into that routine, but
good.
That, or it's picking up a project around the house. I can definitely relate to like, okay, what is one thing that I can do in a half an hour? And I'm talking like, can I scrape the popcorn ceiling off in 3? Like, so I start, my poor husband's like, oh my gosh, what idea does she have next? So God bless his soul. So I can relate on the painting side, more of house projects, maybe than to a canvas, but I do enjoy that as well. Oh, love it's that. Too funny. All right. So Kristen, if you and your family could go on a road trip anywhere in the world, where would you go and what snack would you bring? What is your go-to?
For snacks, we always plan our road trips that we can stop at a Buc-ee's and load up on snacks. I don't know if many people are familiar outside of like the Texas, Louisiana area, but Buc-ee's is like a Walmart sized gas station and it is a whole experience. So yeah, Buc-ee's is our go-to for snacks. And specifically their like candy roasted pecans are delicious. And where are we headed? You know, for a road trip, I think of it as just like time with the fam, and I don't really care where our destination is. So the quirkier, the better. When we drove through Amarillo, we stopped and spray painted all the Cadillacs that were sticking up out of the ground. And so I just love those quirky, weird things. So some of our favorite road trips have been to like Grand Junction, Colorado, or Little Rock, Arkansas, just like kind of not that exciting places, but places where we just did goofy things and had great memories.
I am all about building memories and having some fun adventures with some decent snacks too. All right. Yes. So here's the last and final question. If you could leave the listener with one thing today, what would you want to leave them with?
Just, it's kind of back to my encouragement is hope. There, the way my life started shouldn't have led here. And what I've learned, and I'm just learning over and over, is God is who he says he is. He has adopted us as a child. And if you come from a crazy family, that's really great news that you can be in God's family, because your family maybe doesn't feel like everything you would have hoped and dreamed, but he really has adopted us as his heirs. And he has so much goodness in store for us, regardless of the season we're in today. So it took me years to learn to open up to God, because I was so afraid. I felt like everyone in my life had disappointed me or abandoned me or rejected me. And I was so afraid that I would feel that same thing from God. What if I pray and I get crickets? What if I ask for healing and I get nothing? And I can't have God be a person who disappoints me also. And so I would pray for other people constantly, but I would never pray for myself, because heaven forbid he didn't answer my prayers. And it took me years to start dipping my toe in the water of praying for myself, but I just can't even describe his faithfulness. I would give the tiniest ounce of my faith and he would just overflow it. And so I would just encourage you to trust that he is who he says he is.
That is a great challenge and note to lead me on and the listener on today. And Kristen, where can we find more of your book, more of your resources? What do you have available for the listener today that we can find?
Yeah. Legacy Changer is available anywhere books are sold. And if you would like a little bit of free coaching and just point you in the direction of starting to heal, there is a free quiz on my website, kristenhallinan.com. It's on the homepage, and it's called the Cycle Breaking Superpower. And so it helps you identify maybe some needs that went unmet in your childhood and how you can use those today to start breaking the cycles that you don't want to see happen in your family anymore. And so I offer a lot of free coaching in your results. And hopefully that will feel like a resource to get started and have a little direction on where you can be on your healing journey.
I love that. Well, let's begin our healing journey together. And we will put Kristen's information in our show notes with her website and everything. So Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. This is the Young Adults Today podcast.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode right here on the Young Adults Today podcast. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe. That way you'll never miss a thing. And if you enjoy streaming or listening or watching the Young Adults Today Leader podcast, I have a hunch that you will benefit from a couple other resources. The first is our Facebook community called Young Adult Ministry Leaders. That link is in the show notes in the episode description, where you can join a community of 2,700 other young adult ministry leaders across the globe. The second, we have coaching communities launching this April designed for you to grow as a lifelong learner with other next-gen pastors, young adult ministry leaders, and campus missionaries from across the country, where the link is in the show notes. You can click on coaching communities. The last is we have a 3-book bundle, Reaching the Next, Next Gen Now, and Equip the Saints are our Young Adults Today resource book bundle, where these are great for bringing your board, your staff, your small group, or your leadership team. There's discussion guides, and really you can learn from 13 ways to engage young adults, equipping and understanding engaging young adults, and then raising up an army in the next generation. These books are available individually or in the book bundle when you visit youngadults.today. Thanks so much. We'll see you next episode right here on the Young Adults Today podcast.
Up right now, yeah.